Hi, folks. It's Larry Miller. And yes, the host of The Larry Miller Show. And I was away with a good movie part last week in what could be a terrific movie. I really think it will be. And I'm back now. It was shot in Western Massachusetts. And the name of the movie is The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot. And I asked the director who also wrote it if I could say that name on the air. He said, absolutely, please. And I think it may be the greatest title in the history of movies. It's deep. And I told him, any interview you do, just say the name of the movie. Just say, have you seen the name of the movie? The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot. It was terrific. And I'm back now, and I'm looking forward to telling you about it. And yet I'm going away again. I'm working with Jerry Seinfeld on the road in Redding, California, at the Redding Civic Auditorium. And these are, I hate not doing the show, and so does Colonel Jeff. But he picks out a good rerun, and there's going to be another one this week. And there's much to tell you about that movie and working with Jerry, and I'm looking forward to it. Be well, folks, and I'll see you soon.
And now, live from Level 5 Productions on the island of Milleronia, it's The Larry Miller Show.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who's always wanted to take a hike. Hi, folks, and welcome back to the Larry Miller Show. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And boy, oh boy, that music makes me feel good again. Colonel Jeff, too. We're here on Milleronia, and it's a gorgeous day. Yes, it's true, I control the weather here, but it doesn't matter. It still pays to say it's gorgeous when it's gorgeous. Unless, of course, you want to risk getting tossed in the volcano. But you know what? And as Colonel Jeff just nodded, shook his head, no, you don't. But it is gorgeous. And you know what? Those guys get better every week. That's the Five-ish Finkel Orchestra and the Claire Trevor Dancers, featuring boy tenor Sam Gershick, asking the musical question, what happens if your mattress tag just falls off? Well, Sam, that's a heck of a question. It's a good question. What happens if your mattress tag just falls off? I'm sorry to say it, Sam, but I think the Green Berets still come to your house, cuff you, and tie a hood over your head and drag you off to one of their secret interrogation places. Now, do you eventually get out? We think so, but no one has ever returned to confirm that. So it's, well, it's a tough group that runs that show there. And by the way, here's a note from the past. Colonel Jeff and I both have these same two memories I'm going to tell you right now. And good question, Sam, because as kids, Colonel Jeff and I both had the same crippling fear of those mattress tags. I don't know how we got it. I don't think it spread as a joke, but we really thought, yeah, the police would come screeching up to our houses and drag us away if we tore those mattress tags off, if anything happened to them. And, you know, it didn't ruin our lives, but we thought that was really something. I didn't know why. I thought, well, it's just, you mean under the sheets, they can still tell if the thing is off? So the colonel and I didn't know why, but we both shared that. We were pretty nervous. We thought that would be the end for us if for some reason we wouldn't do it, but one of our goofy friends, he might just do that. Just tear the thing off. We couldn't have that. But we both shared that memory. And here's another one we shared, that we were both told, and I can't even remember how, but probably our folks, but never to curse over our walkie-talkies. Now, walkie-talkies were pretty big as toys for kids. I think it roughly from 1960 to 1965, I'm just guessing, but they were plastic walkie-talkies, and They worked. It was kind of neat because we, you know, and when we grew up, we were still playing war and army and, you know, sneaking around everybody's houses and digging a ditch. So it was like World War I. Parents stopped that one, too, the ditch digging. They didn't care if we snuck around with our toy guns. But, you know, we didn't need to have the shovel there to dig ditches. At any rate, though, we were told you never to curse over our walkie-talkies. And the colonel and I were not from a cursing clan, so we were all right with that. And but that was just one of the things of manners. Oh, you don't curse over the walkie-talkie. Plus, here's one that we were also told, and we obeyed all these things. We were also told that horsing around on the phone or making crank calls, or we used to call them phony phone calls, that the phone cops were going to get you. And that was, by the way, the group, the phone cops. I don't know how or why or who, but we thought, yeah, the phone cops. You know, the first one with the walkie-talkies, you know, that or the mattress tags. Yeah, it was military. I think it was Green Berets or the Army or, you know, Navy SEALs. They were going to come, and we knew they were tough guys, and especially for 8-year-old kids who were still digging a ditch to fight war in. But anyway, horsing around on the phone, no phony phone calls. We did make some phony phone calls, though, by the way. I remember one, there's only one, but I remember it was, we called a place called the Gaelic Pub. The Gaelic Pub, which was on Long Island in Valley Stream. It wasn't in Dublin, but we called the Gaelic Pub, and I remember I was on the phone there, and we asked for, we thought it was a name. I asked for Bob Gaelic and, to see if he was on. Is Mr. Gaelic there, please? You know, we were obviously just knuckleheaded kids. And the guy, the bartender, was just, it's the name of the bar. You know, he didn't want to deal with knuckleheaded kids like this. It's the name of the bar. Oh, what? What? We didn't know what that meant. And so we made a couple more to him, not to make him mad, but just to say, wait a minute, he must have been lying. It must be a guy, Jim Gaelic. And so remember we called again, and one of the other kids would get on the phone. Yes, hello, is Mr. Gaelic there, please? It's not, there's no guy. There's no one named that. It's a bar. Name for a bar. And the colonel just let me know, and I think we might have done this one too, that he would, in the world of phony phone calls, that he and his friends would just pick a name, a telephone number rather, just pick a phone number from the phone book and dial it. And when the guy answered, hello, they'd say, yeah, hi, is Steve there? And the guy would say, no Steve here. Okay. And then 5 minutes later, they'd call back again. Hi, is Steve there? No, there's no Steve here. There's no, okay, you know, there's no Steve. Did it a third time. Is Steve there? No, I'm telling you, there's no. And then 5 minutes later, one more call, and one of them would say, oh, hi, this is Steve. Any messages? Which is, well, first of all, you don't want to be the guy being called. That's the truth of it, you know. That's the bottom line of it. Why should the guy, oh, these kids, and it is obviously kids, that they can tell, anyone could tell your kids, you know, not only because of the good manners on the, oh, hello, is Steve there, please? You know, no one speaks like that. Plus, the voices are higher pitched. Your voices hadn't changed yet. You were just kids. Hi, is Steve there, please? And so, but there you are. That's kids. That's kids in the suburbs or in the farm burbs, the way Colonel Jeff grew up. But in any case, Sam, you know what? Good question. And yes, we mentioned the Five-ish Finkel Orchestra. Five-ish Finkel, God bless him, just passed on. terrific actor. He was, good Lord, 93 years old. And you all know one of his most popular parts was, and he won an Emmy for this, for the David Kelly show Picket Fences. And he played an eccentric lawyer, I think, and a little crazy, but fun to watch. Five-ish Finkel was born in 1922. I just read the obituary today and in the paper, and he was born in Brooklyn, New York. And he got involved in the Yiddish theater when he was 13. That was big in 1922 too, and he was or 1935 when he was 13. But he got really involved in it, and there were many theaters that did Yiddish plays, and so was James Cagney. By the way, most people don't know this. James Cagney could speak fluent Yiddish because he was involved in many Yiddish plays in New York. And then, of course, he went right to being a gangster and becoming a star. But, I mean, he was great. Five-ish Finkel, though, just passed on. And, boy, oh, boy, what a life he had. And we just wanted to mention him. We picked him to lead our orchestra. God bless him. Rest in peace. And he was a great guy. 93, that's pretty good. And he had a lot of hard work and a good amount of success, and God bless you. And I mentioned the Claire Trevor Dancers. I'm going to be talking about her later in something, and I always loved her. She's a great actress. She was from, the 30s and 40s and the 50s, too, but, boy, and she was gorgeous. And this woman, if you just look at her publicity photos, she could play six or seven different human beings, even in photos. She was wonderful as an actress, just great. She could play sad and dejected and funny and just a great angelic character, or just mean as could be. She was wonderful. And, there's another movie you should see sometime. She was starring with John Wayne in Stagecoach. And boy, oh boy. What a good movie that was, and really launched a lot of those folks, especially John Wayne. In any case, Claire, by golly, great actress and a beautiful woman. God bless you, Claire. And so I just wanted to let you know, folks, and by Amazon and PayPal and my book. Now, Amazon is still the greatest company in the world to me because they do three things that no one else can do. Well, four if you count being a sponsor. But the main three things they do are, one, order anything you want. Anything you want. Whatever pops into your head, order it. They're going to send it right to you. And number two, they already have it. They don't even have to ask for it. They don't have to call a company. They don't have to make it themselves. They have it in their giant warehouse that's a mile long and a mile wide and a mile deep and a mile high. That's a big warehouse. I don't care where you're from. But Amazon can do that. And they do it, by the way. And three, the main thing I just love about them, they send us a percentage of whatever you order. And that's pretty neat. And so here, Colonel Jeff and I get money from Amazon based on whatever you order from them. And that's pretty good because we always, we take that money, as you may know, and we go put it right in a box to save for our next big fancy fried chicken dinner with two drinks beforehand in a different place. And so we thank Amazon. Boy, oh boy, I can't wait for another one of those good dinners we go to. And yes, maybe inviting Dr. Chris, maybe he's still studying clog dancing at the university there. What's the name of that university? That's right, the University of Solvang, Solvang, which is a real university. And clog dancing is, a real thing, as you ought to know. In any case, though, Amazon's just great. If you want to get to them, You could go there. You could just, type it in, go up wherever you are on your laptop or on your iPhone, whatever you have. But don't do that. What you want to do is go to our website, which is LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the mountain? Tom Mix. Boy, those old guitars from the 20s. They last, but those strings will pop. It's true, though, folks. If you want to go to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com, and we have a banner that says Amazon. Click that banner and then forget about it. Go take a nap. Lean back in your big, fancy, lazy boy chair and put a magazine over your head. And you know what? And we'll get you there. We'll know. No matter when the light goes off, could be the middle of the night, Colonel Jeff and I on the mainland or here on Milleronia will get you to Amazon. And there's another banner there, by the way, for PayPal. PayPal, boy, still a great group, terrific name. And PayPal makes you think you're saving the world when you deal with them. So here's the good way to think of it. If you like my show, and why wouldn't you, and you'd like to send us a few bucks to help out, and why wouldn't you, you know what? You can do it through PayPal. And I don't, you know, instead of saying donate or pay what you like or join the platinum committee or something, I'm never that fond of phrases like that. So I always just say, buy us some drinks. That's how to contribute. You know, there are different levels. Levels 1 through 5, all the way up to...
We're driving to Florida!
I love that guy who yells, yes. Yes! And so, you know what? Every little bit helps here, folks. You know, it helps us keep the old leg lamp lit. And thank you to everyone who has contributed already. It means a lot. And thank you to the folks who are about to. And by me. That's right. My book. This is really a pleasure to say, folks. My book called Spoiled Rotten America. I love it. I loved writing it. It did really well when it was released. And, I still have a bunch of those books. And I decided, and Colonel Jeff decided, that we'd make them for sale to you. And they're signed hardcover copies. And all you do is go to store.comedyfilmnerds.com. Go to them. And they'll get you there, and they'll get you a book, and I hope you like it. You know what? I know you will. So that leads us to my favorite part of the show, the joke of the week. Okay, and this is a good one, too. I've said this before, but there's nothing better than a nice joke that makes you smile, makes you laugh, and that you could pass on to friends or loved ones. It's a pleasure to make it part of the show here. So this is the joke of the week. And as I said, the Colonel and I both like this one. So a man goes to his doctor because he has migraine headaches. And boy, he can't take it. He says to the doctor, he says, you know, I have to tell you, doctor, these are killing me. They hurt. And they blind me. I can't even see. I have to lie down. It ruins everything in my life there. And I'm wondering if you can give me something, anything to do to help out. And the doctor says to him, you know what? I'll tell you something. This doesn't come up a lot, but I'll tell you. I used to suffer from migraines too. And they had the same effect on me that they're having on you. They would really destroy that part of the day for me. And, wow, they hurt like heck. And I'll tell you what, I was at my wit's end as well. And I'll tell you, I don't get them anymore. These are cured. And I'm going to tell you how. So you can do the same thing. He said, you know what I do? I discovered that when I really feel a bad migraine coming on, he said, I just run in. And I make sweet, sweet love to my wife. And those headaches just go away. Boy, nothing has ever helped better. And the patient says, wow, thank you. And the doctor says, you know what? Give that a try. I want you to come back in a month after doing that and let me know how it goes. A month later, the guy comes back in and the doctor says, well, and the man says, doctor, you know what? You were exactly right. And I can't believe how wonderful a cure this was. It just works. And then, oh, and by the way, you have a lovely house. We thought that was a pretty good joke. Lovely house. Not my wife. Oh, you idiot. I meant your wife, somebody's wife, a girlfriend, anything. Oh, and by the way, you have a lovely house. So I hope you like that one, folks, and pass it on if you do. And that brings us to the second favorite part of the show, the Poetry Corner. Music still gets me. This is a lovely poem by the great Joyce Kilmer. He was born in New Jersey in 1886, graduated from Rutgers University, and enlisted in the army 3 days after we declared war on Germany. And in fact, I think he was killed in battle there in Europe in 1918. But God bless him, what a poet he was. And this one is a good one of his called The House with Nobody in It. Whenever I walk to Suffern along the Erie track, I go by a poor old farmhouse with its shingles broken and black. I suppose I've passed it 100 times, but I always stop for a minute and look at the house, the tragic house, the house with nobody in it. I never have seen a haunted house, but I hear there are such things, that they hold the talk of spirits, their mirth and sorrowings. I know this house isn't haunted, and I wish it were, I do, for it wouldn't be so lonely if it had a ghost or two. This house on the road to Suffern needs 12 panes of glass, and somebody ought to weed that walk and take a scythe to the grass. It needs new paint and shingles, and the vines should be trimmed and tied, but what it needs the most of all is some people living inside. If I had a lot of money and all my debts were paid, I'd put a gang of men to work with brush and saw and spade. I'd buy that place and fix it up the way it used to be. And I'd find some people who wanted a home and give it to them free. Now a new house standing empty with staring window and door looks idle, perhaps, and foolish like a hat on its block in the store. But there's nothing mournful about it. It cannot be sad and lone for the lack of something within it that it has never known. But a house that has done what a house should do, a house that has sheltered life, that has put its loving wooden arms around a man and his wife, a house that has echoed a baby's laugh and held up his stumbling feet, is the saddest sight when it's left alone that ever your eyes could meet. So whenever I go to Suffern along the Erie track, I never go by the empty house without stopping and looking back. Yet it hurts me to look at the crumbling roof and the shutters fallen apart, for I can't help thinking the poor old house is a house with a broken heart. Isn't that nice? Isn't that lovely? Good for you, Joyce Kilmer, folks. Boy, that really means a lot. And like, by the way, like a great joke, Look that poem up and pass it along yourselves. The House with Nobody in It by Joyce Kilmer. And that brings me to the third favorite part of the show.
MMM. Triple M. Magic Movie Moment.
Boy, good theme. And this is a great movie, folks. And it's, well, it's one of the reasons I brought up Claire Trevor before. It's called Key Largo from 1948, directed by John Huston, starring Humphrey Bogart, Edward G. Robinson, Lauren Bacall, Claire Trevor, Lionel Barrymore, Thomas Gomez, Mark Lawrence. It's a great movie. It's so good. It's, well, about a soldier who comes back after World War II and travels to that little island off of Florida, Key Largo, because one of the men in his command was killed in Italy in World War II, and he wanted to visit that fella. The soldier's name was George Temple, and he has a father and a wife, and the soldier is dead, but the father is Lionel Barrymore, and the wife is Lauren Bacall. So he comes to their hotel on the island there. It's a small wooden hotel in 1948, but he goes there. It's a wonderful movie, folks. And as he gets there, he realizes, he sees, well, he's not alone. There's a whole other group of fellas there, and you can tell the second you see them, they're not wholesome guys. In fact, they're gangsters. And the leader of the gangsters is Edward G. Robinson, and his character is Johnny Rocco. And boy, oh boy, things go south from there. And they really start spinning around, and his henchmen are just as mean as he is. Thomas Gomez plays Curly, one of the henchmen. He's very good. All these fellows are. But you know in a second, Robinson does not mean well. Great actor, Edward G. Robinson. He plays, well, the character he plays here, Johnny Rocco, is a mean man. And he's a narcissist, and he just wants to have one of his henchmen shave him. And he takes a couple of baths or a couple of showers a day and puts on pretty hot down there in Florida in those days. And this time, though, he's coming there because he was thrown out of the country. He was deported. He was the biggest gangster in Prohibition days, and now he has to live in Cuba. And it's been years and years and years, but he's come back, well, to commit a crime. And he's come back with counterfeit money. And you know what, folks? He comes back, and who meets him there is Claire Trevor, who used to be his mistress. And Claire was also a singer, a nightclub singer, and Johnny Rocco put her on in his nightclub there, and she was doing very well. She was a hot number and a great singer. And she hasn't seen him, and he hasn't seen her in a long time. Well, about 14 years. And, she's a little unsteady herself. She drinks a lot. She's a drinker. And as Leonard Maltin put it in his review, she's a boozy moll. And you love her, though. I do, and you do. You will, too, boy, folks. And, well, she goes there to meet him. And we see in a second, her acting is so good. She's not good anymore. It's hard for us. She's a little nervous, and her hands shake a bit, and she wants a drink. And it's only 12 or 1 in the afternoon, but she has a big drinking problem. But Johnny Rocco won't give her a drink. He doesn't like the way she's fallen, and he's just a mean man anyway. And he decides, you know what, sing a song, Gay. That's her name as the character, Gay Dawn. And he said, yeah, you used to be great, you know. Let me hear you again. Sing a song for one of the old ones. And there's nobody there, by the way. They're just all the characters in the lobby of the hotel. And there's no piano player. There's nobody. There's nothing. But, well, Claire Trevor really wants a drink there, and so she starts to sing. She's just standing there in a circle with all of them and starts to sing. And they know, and you and I know, too, that she's not good anymore. She's not at all good anymore. And she gets through it, and it's very touching. What Claire Trevor does with that really moves your heart, and even though you can tell it's not very good anymore. And Robinson looks over at his henchman there, Curly, and Curly just looks back at him and shakes his head no, lightly, you know, just, that they all know that she's no good anymore. And she finishes the song, but now Rocco still refuses to give her the drink, because that's how rotten he is, that she, nah, you're no good, you don't get a drink, no, and she's sad and shaken and kind of crumbling. And she came all this way to see her old boyfriend, Johnny Rocco, and he doesn't want her, he doesn't need her, he doesn't even like her, he doesn't like anything anymore. And you know what happens, folks? Humphrey Bogart goes over to there, to where the little bar is, and he pours a drink and goes over and hands it to her, which is a great thing to do, especially in this violent, vicious group he's in right there. And that really makes her feel better. And she has more to do and more to go. But that scene for me was always a magic movie moment. The poor thing, Claire Trevor, great actress. And she's just trying to get something back that meant something to her in her life. This old boyfriend who was never very nice anyway, but boy, that's how it goes. And the only good soul in the whole room, Humphrey Bogart, pours her a drink and walks over and hands it to her. And the way she looks at him and the way he looks at her, you realize, you know what? That was a magic movie moment. I hope you like that. If you haven't seen it, see Key Largo. Get it. It's a wonderful movie. If you've seen it many times, see it again. It's great again. If you've never seen it, you'll love it. And you'll love how the characters grow and what happens to this one and what happens to that one. And please let us know also, by the way, on our website, when you see Key Largo, write in and say, you know what, Larry? You were right. And because, you know, the truth is, there's nothing really other than great movies or great theater or great jokes. There's nothing that moves me that much and it moves my heart that much. Colonel Jeff and I were talking about this, that we have no interest in politics anymore. Now, I never talk about politics on the show, and I'm not going to this time, but the point is not the politicians. It's the whole nature of, I don't even read the paper anymore. I don't watch the news. I don't like the front page. Every single lead article on the front page is the exact same as the one yesterday and the one tomorrow. It's just, it's a terrible way. I don't know why news people, if that's what they are, just keep insisting to peddle out this stuff. I have no interest in it. And, you know, I don't read the papers. I said I don't watch the news. I seriously wish all the political advisors would kill themselves. Is that too strong? No, it's not. I mean, that's the point. You see these advisors blathering on. Well, he said this and she said that. It, you know what? It doesn't even feel too strong to just want them to blow their brains out. Does anyone watch this stuff anymore? Do you? How many debates were there? 20, 30? Who cares? How long have they all been running? How long do these people run for office? 6 months? 2 years? 5 years? Do you care? I don't. You know, and it reminded me of, does any man come home from work? Like old black and white movies, just sit in the chair in his house there in the living room and have a drink and read the paper. I mean, that used to be such a common, popular scene in every movie in 1930, 1940, 1950. Does any man still do that? No, I don't think so. Does he sit there still with the slacks on from his suit and the shirt and tie still on and took the jacket off and just sits there to have a smoke and a drink and read the paper? I think the paper was better then. He didn't read the paper and say, gee, this thing again, it stinks. And so people don't do that anymore. Is the news cycle upsetting your morning routine? Colonel Chef was wondering that, because he said, yeah, did you used to read the paper after your morning shower and breakfast, and now you just sit there drumming your fingers? I mean, the truth is, yes, I can't read them anymore. I like the obituary section. I've mentioned that before. Now, I know you're saying, wait a minute, those are dead people. Yeah, but it's like little biographies of people's lives, and they're good people, and it's very interesting to me. I like reading some of the sports section, but that's it. I can't read anymore. I just can't do it. Where I read that lead article again, well, today he said this and she said that. It's the same as yesterday. And we've still got, well, 3-4 months to go. I can't take it. I would like to suggest to all our politicians and all our political people to switch to what we do here on Milleronia, okay? Our whole election process is 2 weeks, not 2 years, 2 weeks. We have a debate, one debate between the two candidates running, just one, and it's not long. They usually last 10 minutes. Then we switch to reruns of Get Smart, The Rifleman, Route 66, you know, things people like. And, but just a 10-minute debate, because that's all people want. 1 year, I remember a couple of years ago, it lasted 15 minutes. And, well, we tossed the moderator in the volcano. We're not kidding around here on Milleronia. And none of the other moderators did that again, by the way, which is the point. He knows, the next moderator, he or she knows, keep it to 10 minutes or you'll be taking a swan dive into the volcano and you won't like it. Now, you know what? So there's no pleasure in that. I know we all go through this, but there's no pleasure in it anymore for me. It's funny, too, because with the tension and pressure that we all go through in life, Colonel Jeff needed some time off last week. He really needed it as a producer of, well, here, our podcast here, and many others. And he wanted to get away from it all. So he and a friend took a hike in Angeles National Forest. And as he told me, it's a really big place. And it's about an hour drive from where we are on the mainland. And so you drive an hour, get out of the car, and there you are. Then it's an hour back to where you're going afterwards. And, he said they saw no one. That's number one. Okay? By the way, he was prepared. He mentioned this. He had a bag of pistachios and a switchblade. And that's it. And he used it. He said... One or two pistachios in the big bag weren't cracked. And he said, I made short work of them. Got out the switchblade, flicked it open, and that was that. So, okay, you know, so remember, though, and get this, no cars, no people, no billboards, no nothing. He said they got out of the car, and it was so quiet when a fly went by. Even 3 or 4 feet away, he said, you heard it. You could hear the fly. And that's kind of amazing. I don't need to hear a fly, but you know what I mean. You say, how do you like that? A fly. And so it takes an hour to get there, an hour to get back, and they were hiking for 6 hours. Now, I think that's a lot, by the way, but in a good way. 6 hour hike and an hour to get there and an hour to go back, and I always wanted to go and do something like that. That's the truth. Every time I got the thought, I say, why don't I go to some of the nice places around here? Take a friend, do the same thing. Drive out there, walk around, and bring some pistachios and some soda water or a pint of whiskey. That's not a good idea, I guess, is it? No, Not on a hike. That'll be the last hike for a while. But the truth is, folks, every time I got that thought, hey, why don't I take a hike? The next thought I had, always had, was one word, bears. Don't they have bears? Okay, two words, and kidnappers. That's what I always think about. Well, the bears, they have bears there. That's the whole thing about, it's a park, it's the Angeles National Forest, and it's huge. It's as big as a whole city, and it's gorgeous, and there are trails there, but no people, not a person, not an anything, no telephone poles, no wires, there's nothing there except bears. And the bears, last I heard, don't really care that you're relaxing. They don't need to know that you just needed some time away. And they don't care. Well, bears are bears. This happens all the time around here. It must happen where you live, too, that the bear just says, hey, look, a chubby guy. Isn't that what you'd say if you were a bear? So I don't know. I said that to the colonel. I said, were you afraid of the bears and the kidnappers? And you just, what are you going to throw pistachios at them? And he said, yes. He said, you think of that. But so I don't know how soon it's going to be. I'd like to take a hike, but I'm going to stay with the things I know, the things you know, too, that Homer is Homer. Pluto is a planet. And so remember, folks, as always,
if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. And that's the truth. And you don't need any bears or kidnappers. Be well, and we'll see you here next time.